Dan Rothschild here. Welcome to the Wisconsin Forward podcast. In this episode, we'll be talking about the upcoming crucial Wisconsin Supreme Court race between Brad Schimmel and Susan Crawford. To discuss this one, I'm joined by Dan Schaefer, the founder of the prize-winning Recombobulation Area and the political editor here at Civic Media. Dan Schaefer, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Matt. Happy to be here.
You know, we've got another big election here in Wisconsin on April 1st. It seems like we've had one huge election after another nonstop since 2010, doesn't it?
We don't get a whole lot of plays off here in Wisconsin, do we? It's just one after the next when it comes to these everything on the line elections. We don't really get any kind of break here, do we?
No breaks in sight. And I know a lot of people were exhausted after the Trump debacle in November, but I'm hoping people are recovering, gathering their strength, getting their resistance and spirit of resistance back up, because we need it not only against Trump and Elon Musk, but we need it right here in Wisconsin to see what kind of state we're going to have going forward. So let's take a look at the two candidates. I don't know so much about Susan Crawford. I know more about Brad Schimmel, but why don't you tell me who is Brad Schimmel?
Well, Brad Schimmel obviously is the former attorney general in the state of Wisconsin, and he has been on the court in Waukesha County for the past number of years, and he has been running in this race for Wisconsin Supreme Court for 16 months now. He's launched his campaign for the 2025 race for Wisconsin Supreme Court even before Eric Hovde launched his campaign for Senate in 2024.
That's got to be an indoor record, isn't it? I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. You know, I first came across Schimmel when, even before he was attorney general in the Walker regime, when he was Waukesha County DA, and he gave a sweetheart deal then to Scott Jensen, the disgraced former Republican assembly leader who was initially convicted of felonies during the caucus scandal in the state capitol when he and his Democratic counterpart were raising money illegally in the Capitol for campaigns. But he was convicted originally on a couple felonies in Dane County, and then on a technicality it got tossed out, so it was retried for some bizarre reason down in Waukesha, because politicians get to establish where they're going to be tried. And of course, Waukesha is Republican territory. Schimmel was the DA, and Schimmel let him off with just a misdemeanor, which was a terrible injustice, it seemed to me. But that told me that Brad Schimmel was a Republican hack through and through, and he's proved that in every position he's held, it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's been running a very partisan campaign, even though he is saying that he wants to come to the court as an unbiased observer, which if you've paid any attention to Schimmel's background at all in the race, in, you know, as in his time as attorney general, you know, he's a very Republican partisan guy. And so, like, and that really seems like the type of campaign that he's been running for state Supreme Court here as well.
Well, you mentioned his role as AG under Walker, part of the Walker wrecking crew, as I call it. In that position, he did a couple things, at least that I know of. You may know of more. I mean, he defended the gerrymandered maps, for instance. He opposed expanding women's reproductive rights and wanted to confine them. And he joined other Republican attorney generals across the country in trying to overturn the Affordable Care Act. Those were the things that stuck out to me. Are there any other ones that stuck out to you?
Yeah, he also took some strange positions when it came to, dealing with kind of the legal side of these opioid settlements that have been happening. I think that really kind of became a major issue in, you know, the latter part of the 2010s when he was the attorney general. And there was kind of an issue with that. In that he was, I believe, receiving donations from, I don't know if it was the Sackler family specifically or a contribution from a super PAC related to the pharmaceutical company that they own, Purdue Pharma. But, you know, they donated quite a bit to at least the Republican Attorney General's Association. I don't remember if it was directly to Schimmel. But, you know, that seems like a major issue, too. Like, opioids are an issue that has touched a lot of people in the state of Wisconsin, and the fact that he was, if nothing else, kind of slow walking his approach to, you know, addressing those settlements seems like a bit of a problem.
So did we get cheated out of some of that money as a result? What happened there?
You know, that I'm not sure, because I think, you know, the timing of it meant that Josh Call became attorney general. But that was also around the same time that, you know, with the lame duck law, that they were removing certain certain rights that or responsibilities that Call had as AG. So I don't remember where exactly that one left off.
The other thing that struck me was his bragging about the voter ID law. The voter ID law passed under Walker when he was attorney general, when Schimmel was attorney general. And then he was on record with, I think it was Vicki McKenna, saying, how many of your listeners really honestly are sure that Ron Johnson was going to win re-election or Trump was going to win in Wisconsin the first time if we didn't have voter ID? I mean, that to me is just a concession about the political calculus, and the really callous one, behind passing voter ID, which Todd Albaugh here at Civic Media has been talking about a lot, that it was designed to prevent people from voting. And Republican senators, Todd was there in the cloakroom when they were giddy, to use Todd's words, about repressing, suppressing the vote. And here we have Schimmel bragging about it. That does not strike me as the kind of person you want on the court, does it?
No, certainly not. You know, he so I was last week, Schimmel had an event in Milwaukee. They're both of the candidates for state Supreme Court are, you know, just having these get to know you type events at the Marquette University Law School, hosted by Derek Mosley. So last week on the February 18th, I sat in on the one at Marquette with Brad Schimmel, and he, you know, he kind of like what they did in this was, it was a lot of like kind of like biographical talk and talking through like what his history was as a DA and as attorney general and all of these different types of things. And he was talking about like the type of approach that he would want to bring to the bench. And just like, it was, you know, one of those questions, like what's one word that would describe the approach he would bring to the bench? And he said, objectivity.
Oof. Not that anybody can be objective, but much less someone with his history and background.
Right, exactly. So given the campaign that he's been running, you know, given the given just his record, he's got a long record as a partisan politician and is somebody who clearly makes a lot of decisions with that in mind. You know, it was a comment that it just seems very paradoxical from where he was coming from and talking about how objectivity is being the most important thing. But, you know, you just take any look at this guy and his record and his campaign, and it just certainly does not seem like objectivity is paramount for him at all.
And on the abortion issue, he was out there supporting that 1849 law that bans abortion in Wisconsin, or might be interpreted as banning abortion in Wisconsin, depending on how the judges decide. I mean, there was a Dane County judge who said it doesn't ban abortion, but that's going to be up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court, whoever wins this one, right? So he or Susan Crawford will probably be deciding that or helping to decide that one.
Yeah, and if not this case, another one, right? So these, because these... because these terms are 10 years, the selection for is for a 10-year term on the court. If it's not for this race or not for this case on the legality of that 1849 abortion law and some of the other laws that have been passed since, you know, if not that one, you know, it would be important to have somebody on the court for the next 10 years who's going to be ruling on these issues in a way that reflects kind of where Wisconsinites are. Because I think a lot of the action that Brad Schimmel took as a Republican attorney general, you know, a decade ago, certainly doesn't match, certainly probably didn't match the electorate at the time, and certainly doesn't now. And, you know, you look at the polling and where a lot of Wisconsinites are on the issue of abortion. This is one that, you know, liberals and Democrats have had a pretty distinct advantage on, especially since Roe was overturned. And so, you know, given Wisconsin's, you know, kind of the Wisconsin Supreme Court's role in these cases going forward, I think that's going to be a very important issue for voters to look at in this campaign.
And the race is crucial because right now there is a 4-3 liberal majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. There are only 7 justices, not 9 like there is in Washington, 7 here in Wisconsin. And Ann Walsh Bradley, one of the great justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, a liberal, with tremendous intellect and grace, decided not to run for re-election. So there is a liberal seat, if you will, on the court up, and the balance of the court is just hanging by a thread. So if Susan Crawford loses to Brad Schimmel, Republicans will then have a majority on the court. So that's why right now it's such an important one. Let's talk a little bit about Susan Crawford, who, you know, I just don't know that much about. Tell me about her.
Yeah, so Susan Crawford, you know, she's kind of follows in the follows a path that we've seen for a lot of these liberal candidates running for Wisconsin's Supreme Court. You know, whether it's somebody from some Dane County or Milwaukee County, she, like Janet Protasiewicz or Rebecca Dalet or Jill Karofsky before her, very accomplished, very a strong record and resume going into these races, and you know, making the jump from Dane County Circuit Court to the run for Wisconsin Supreme Court is pretty similar to what Jill Karofsky did in 2020. And so, you know, I think she has worked in a number of different roles over her career. She was chief legal counsel to Governor Jim Doyle. She worked in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Corrections. She served as an assistant attorney general in the Department of Justices in both Iowa and Wisconsin. And she, like Schimmel, has been campaigning for this for quite some time. She launched her campaign not quite as early as Schimmel did, but she launched her campaign in June of 2024.
And the field cleared pretty quickly for her. There was some talk at the beginning that former assembly person and I believe appellate court judge Chris Taylor was going to contest for that. Do you know why she backed out and gave Susan Crawford a free run?
That I'm not sure. But, you know, I think we've seen this in the past where I think, you know, certain candidates might want to avoid some sort of a contentious primary, knowing what kind of what is going to be on the line for the general election. And, you know, as we're recording this, the primary was last week. And on both sides of the aisle I think there was also some talk of some other potential candidates getting in on the conservative side as well. But this, you know, ended up not having a primary and ended up just is going to be Crawford versus Schimmel. So, you know, I think a lot of people are making comparisons to the race from 2 years ago, won by Janet Protasiewicz, in the 2023 race for Wisconsin Supreme Court. You know, one of the big factors that's going to be different from that is that there is not a primary this year. There was a primary. There were four candidates that were whittled down to two in that primary 2 years ago. But such is not the case this year.
You know, I'm usually of the view that primaries are a good thing, that it gives the candidates batting practice for the finals, for the runoff. And not having primaries sometimes proves to be a disadvantage. Or when people bow out, as they did in the Mandela Barnes race at the end, I'm not sure that served him well or us well. But I see both sides of that. Where do you come down on this question?
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think it is better to have some sort of primary to let the voters decide. Right. And I think we saw that a couple of years ago. I mean, when Janet Protasiewicz, won the primary very convincingly, even though there was, you know, another liberal candidate in that race, you know, perhaps that sharpened her focus over the course of the campaign. You know, I remember being there at this forum or that this kind of debate style event in Madison, where it was, Janet Protasiewicz and Everett Mitchell were the two liberal candidates, and Daniel Kelly and Jennifer Doro as the two conservative candidates. And I think that at the time, it seemed like Jennifer Doro was on the ascent, given the high profile ruling that she had in the Waukesha, case that she ruled on that was high profile news with Daryl Brooks driving it to the Waukesha Christmas parade. And, you know, her ruling on that. But then when she got to that forum, you know, I was at that forum and she really flopped in that venue. And it really seemed like, you know, they were coronating her before she got to that forum, and then she was just kind of like reading these answers out of a binder and just did not seem ready and equipped for that type of race. And then I think the tenor of it shifted further for the conservatives to, you know, towards Daniel Kelly,
who wasn't a great candidate either.
Who was not a great candidate. Yeah, he was, you know, and he now has the distinction of losing in Wisconsin, a 50-50 state. He's lost by double digit margins for Wisconsin for full terms on the Wisconsin Supreme Court twice. So, you know, say what you will about Brad Schimmel not being a great candidate, and I don't think he is a great candidate, but he's a better one than Daniel Kelly. Not a high bar to clear exactly, but he's a better candidate than Daniel Kelly.
Yeah, and that's something people should be aware of. It's not going to be a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination. The issues that are going to be before the court that are so important coming up, we touched on the abortion issue. There are a bunch of other ones. Which ones come to mind for you?
Yeah, redistricting seems like it's going to be a huge one here. You know, Ben Wickler was on one of our shows on Civic Media last week talking about how Republican groups are already fundraising on trying to re-gerrymander Wisconsin's state legislative maps. There's a lot of talk about, you know, how this race would factor into legal challenges for the congressional maps in addition to the state legislative ones that were struck down before, late in 2023. So it's going to be, I think that is going to be a huge part of it. Act 10, you know, that case, we'll see where that goes. There's, you know, it's always, even if there is a ruling, it seems like there's going to be an inevitable appeal or something or whatever.
I know some Republicans are saying Susan Crawford, if she gets it, should recuse on Act 10 because she was at the Doyle administration opposing or as an attorney opposing Act 10 or something. I don't know if that would happen, but I know they're trying to make an issue of that.
Yeah, and they tried to do that with Protasiewicz too, and she just said that she would not be recusing in that case. So it's going to be interesting to see where exactly that one goes. But I think at zooming out, I think there are a number of other issues. Like, you know, there are some separation of powers questions that have been raised before the court and about what exactly the legislature can and can't, you know, consolidate certain powers within certain committees or whatever it might be. And again, it's just we talk about this as being, you know, some of the flashpoint issues that are in the news right now. But, you know, whether it's Act 10 or redistricting or abortion, like those might be the what we're looking at as top issues right now in 2025. But again, this is for a 10-year term, and this is for somebody who's going to be on the court until 2035. So it's hard to really speculate about what issues are going to be before the court on a full 10-year term as well.
Yeah, because the Wisconsin Supreme Court governs everything here in Wisconsin, you know, our rights, you know, our, the funding for public schools and school choice, that might come before, you know, big dairy farms, you know, CAFOs, that may come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. You never know, but it really affects us on a day-to-day, the decisions that are made. And then you're making another argument that I haven't thought about, really. I saw you write at Recombobulation Area, and I think I heard you talking with Jane Mantanera about this, that there's this question of who's going to hold the majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court for refereeing the 2028 elections. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. So, you know, I feel like the 2023 race for Wisconsin Supreme Court was kind of this culmination of a years long project for liberals to win control of the court. And so I think, you know, starting in 2018, when Rebecca Dallet won that race, that flipped one seat, and then Jill Karofsky in 2020 and then Janet Protasiewicz in 2023. That was kind of the culmination of this years long effort to win control of the court. Now it's kind of a different dynamic, right? Even though just 2 years later, another everything on the line race. But this year begins a run of 6 years in a row where we will have a race for Wisconsin Supreme Court on the spring election ballot.
That sounds that's just too exhausting to even contemplate.
It is too exhausting to contemplate, but here's why this race is particularly important, so that we don't have an everything on the line race for next year or in 2027. So if Crawford wins this year, it would remain a 4-3 liberal majority. And that would be the case for pretty much until 2028, until Rebecca Dalit's 10-year term is up in 2028. So I think...
Why is that?
That's because we've seen.
That's because the next couple races are for right wing or Republican judges or Republican leaning justices, correct?
That's right. So Rebecca Bradley is up in 2026.
The bad Bradley.
Rebecca Bradley is up in 2026, and then Annette Ziegler is up in 2027. So both conservative, both part of the court's conservative wing. You know, I think Bradley is probably the most conservative, most right-wing member of the court right now. And so if Schimmel wins this year, then it would kind of ping pong back to yet another everything on the line. You know, the this seat determines the majority next year with Bradley. It could be another similar dynamic in 2027. But what I'm saying is that if Crawford wins now, you're going to have a liberal majority on the court, on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, until at least 2028. And I think the reason why that seems especially important is because of what we've seen after the first month and change of the Trump administration, of Donald Trump's return to office, and what Elon Musk and Doge and whatever else is rampaging through the federal government. I think it's going to be really important for the next 4 years to have some reliable checks and balances, and that starts at the state level. And I think, you know, we're starting to see, you know, some of the effects and of these layoffs and these purges and these changes and whatever. But as we go forward for the next few years, I think it would be really important. I think checks and balances from the court, and whether, you know, I think J.D. Vance talked about this a little bit, whether they're going to listen to those courts.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a really important question that we're all going to be asking in the political universe for the next 4 years. So if you want to make sure that you're not in another, you know, do or die election a year from now in Wisconsin when Rebecca Bradley's up, or the following year when Annette Ziegler is up, I think that is a really important part of the calculation that people need to have in mind for this year's race. Because I think, you know, if Crawford wins, again, you're going to have a liberal majority on the court until at least 2028. And, you know, if Rebecca Dalit runs for another term, that could even that could extend even further, because I think it's Hagedorn that's going to be up in 29. So, you know, again, this is 6 years in a row of Wisconsin Supreme Court races. We want to avoid these everything on the line, you know, all these disgusting ads that we're seeing on the airwaves every 5 seconds. I think people want to avoid those types of campaigns and just get back to just kind of a more, you know, less intense races for these roles.
You've also alluded, Dan Schaefer, to kind of a nightmare scenario if Republican-leaning justices have the majority on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, that they might, as three of them wanted to do in 2020, throw out tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of votes and just basically handpick who won the Wisconsin presidential election.
Right. Yeah. Let's not forget that this was the closest state court in the country to siding with any of the Trump campaign's challenges to the 2020 election. And it was, if not for Brian Hagedorn, you know, siding with the three liberal justices in that ruling, we could have been headed towards some real constitutional crisis territory with what was happening in the state of Wisconsin at the time, you know, with those ridiculous, nonsensical challenges to our votes, to people's votes in the 2020 election. And so it is another reminder that, you know, that this is going to be a really important race, not only for, you know, what these justices might be ruling on when it applies to just issues happening in the state of Wisconsin, but this is something that really has far-reaching impact on the whole nation. When it comes to, you know, these elections going forward. So, you know, I think 2 years ago, some of the things that Daniel Kelly was saying really called into question whether he would or where he would rule on these types of election challenges, or how he might have ruled had he defeated Kurofsky in 2020 and remained in that role that he was appointed to by Scott Walker in 2016 as a member of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. So, you know, the voters decided and they, you know, tossed Daniel Kelly out of office at that point. And now we still have a democracy in the state of Wisconsin in no small part because of that. And so, you know, that's another factor looking forward for future elections. Do you trust Brad Schimmel to say that your vote's going to count when he's out there on right wing talk radio talking about how, you know, the January 6th rioters didn't get a fair shake, or I forget exactly the phrasing that he used on that, but he was kind of siding with those January 6th rioters in a certain sense in the comments that he was making there. And obviously with the pardons that Donald Trump issued on day one or two or whatever it was on that, you know, these are all important factors to consider.
Factors for all of us as voters to consider on April 1st. And if you're voting earlier by absentee, you can vote a couple weeks before that. But turnout is going to be key. And I'm wondering, what's your sense on the progressive Democratic side? I know there's this exhaustion and futility right after the election of Donald Trump. But this, I have a theory that this will be the first time that voters who don't like Trump and don't like Elon Musk and don't like what's going on to our government and the assaults on our democracy will be the first time to register their disgust in some meaningful way at the polls, and that may galvanize the voters for Susan Crawford. Do you think there's any sense to that?
I do. I think that, you know, this is really the first state level election test in the Trump 2.0 era, right? You know, and of course that's going to happen in Wisconsin. Of course, Wisconsin's going to be the place that it's the first place for this. I think there are some other, you know, gubernatorial races in other states happening in the fall that people are taking a look at that would be part of that as well. But at least for the next, you know, 9 months or so, the first 9 months of the administration, I think everything happening in the political universe right now is going to be viewed through the prism of Donald Trump's scorched earth return to office and everything that Elon Musk is doing in the federal government, just taking a wrecking ball to agency after agency. And so, you know, given the fact that Elon Musk now is getting directly involved in this race by putting up millions of dollars, I expect, you know, the total to continue to rise in the coming weeks before the April 1st election. But I do wonder if this race, to a certain extent, becomes a referendum on Trump 2.0 and on particularly on Elon Musk, because I think, you know, that has really his role has really emerged as I think the main thing that liberals and progressive voters are especially enraged and upset by, and wanting to see, you know, their Democratic elected representatives and all that push back on this in any way that they can. Well, here's an opportunity for voters to have their say. And I think you're right. I think there is some exhaustion on the left, some election fatigue, certainly just in general in the state of Wisconsin, given, you know, how aggressively the candidates were campaigning here throughout all of 2024. But, you know, a presidential electorate is different from a spring election electorate. You're not going to have the same turnout. And Donald Trump really was successful in his campaign by turning out what us in the political science dork community would refer to as low propensity voters. He was really good at turning out those low propensity voters, and it was a big reason why he won in the state of Wisconsin. He now has the highest popular vote total in any presidential race in the state of Wisconsin in 2024. And so I think, you know, Schimmel seems to be approaching this election saying, like, hey, if we get the same people who voted to elect Donald Trump in November out to vote for us in April, we're going to win. But I think that misses a key component of the realignment we're seeing at the national level, at the state level, and it misses a key component of how different these electorates are, because a lot of there are a lot of voters who will only show up for a presidential election. Or, you know, we even saw it last year. There were a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump and then didn't vote the rest of the ballot, whether it was Eric Hovde or congressional candidates or state legislative candidates or whatever it might be. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out from like a turnout perspective and all of that. But I think there are some, you know, presidential electorate versus spring election electorate dynamics that are going to be really important ones as we look ahead to this.
I mean, I got to think that low propensity voters are going to be especially low propensity voters when it comes to an election on April 1st that isn't a presidential election. And also, on the other point you were making, Dan Schaefer, Elon Musk is less popular than Donald Trump is. And so to the extent that it's a referendum on Elon Musk, that will help Susan Crawford here, I got to think.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, we've heard some comments from Ben Wickler, who's back from his run for DNC chair and has been on the civic media airwaves a couple times over the last week. So I'd encourage you to check those out. But I think that's going to be it seems like that's going to be part of his approach, too, is running against Elon. You know, we know the U-lines are going to be putting a ton of money into this race, as they do for every statewide race in the state of Wisconsin. So it's kind of running against the billionaire class. Comfortable place for Democrats to be.
Let's talk about money in this race. The last race for Wisconsin Supreme Court shattered all the records at more than $50 million. This one is supposed to even shatter that one, which was more than double the prior record. I mean, and Elon Musk himself already in late February had thrown $2.5 million in change to groups that are supporting Brad Schimmel. And the reason he can do that is because Wisconsin election law got rewritten in 2015 by the Walker folks and the Republican legislature, because there used to be a $10,000 aggregate limit. You could give no more than $10,000 to any candidate. If you gave $10,000 to Schimmel, you couldn't give a dime to the Republican Party. You couldn't give a dime to any of the outside electioneering groups. But the law was rewritten there in part because of some U.S. Supreme Court decisions and because Republicans thought that they could make hay on the big donors more than the Democrats could. Ben Wickler's proved them wrong in some prior races. I'm not sure he's going to prove them wrong in this one. But what they did in 2015, the Walker folks, was double the amount that individuals could give to specific candidates, and then just basically tore down the ceiling on what any rich person could give to the political parties or to the outside groups, and then said the outside groups and the political parties and the campaign committees all could shuffle money between themselves. So right now there is no limit on what a super rich person can give in Wisconsin. And look at Elon Musk. I mean, rather than giving $20,000 to Brad Schimmel, I haven't checked to see whether he's done that, but he doesn't need to do that because he can give more than 100 times that to outside groups that are saying the same thing that the Brad Schimmel campaign committee is doing. So that 2015 rewrite just made a total mockery of our ability to limit the amount that the super wealthy can throw around in our elections to tell us who to vote for and what laws should follow. And so we need to do something about campaign finance reform. And I think this election is going to demonstrate that more than anything. But I think you're right. This focus on, you know, it, like a Bernie Sanders campaign, you know, are you going to support the billionaire class or are you going to support everyone having an equal voice in this state or in this country?
I think it's important to recognize that both sides are getting some pretty high dollar donations from some very wealthy folks. So the Wisconsin Democratic Party got donations from George Soros, from J.B. Pritzker, from
Reid Hoffman, I think.
Reid Hoffman, the founder of LinkedIn. So I think that, you know, this is Wickler has been successful at exploiting that loophole created in 2015 by the Republicans. He's, you know, they made this change, and you know, you're not going to have if these are the if this is the landscape we're going to play on, then that's what you got to play on. But I think, you know, it, in the long term, in the bigger picture sense, like it's just such an awful way to go about campaigning, to have tens of millions of dollars from all of these outside forces flooding the Wisconsin airwaves for a couple months. And it's the type of ads that they bring too, that's just like, you know, it's pretty vile stuff that you see in on the airwaves in these ads. And it's just, we're just so inundated by it. You know, and I just think it really makes the process really toxic. And I think I would hope that this is something that we at some point would need to address and close some of those loopholes and address the role of money in politics, because it's not getting us anywhere.
No, and the irony is in 2010, 2009, there was a law put on the books that would have public financing for Wisconsin Supreme Court races, and it lasted all of one Wisconsin Supreme Court race, and then Walker and the Republican legislature threw it out. And so we're left, just as you say, with billionaires on both sides splattering our screens with mud during the election time.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I would hope that if the Democrats retain the governorship and get hold of both chambers of the legislature at some point in the near future, that they will revisit this campaign finance law and restore some semblance of limits that the super rich folks have and some semblance of disclosure and transparency, because we should know, you know, who's spending what on which candidate. And we also should, more fundamentally, all have an equal say. We all should have an equal tug on the rope. And right now it's the rich folks, and it shouldn't be a contest between, you know, 10 Democratic billionaires and 10 Republican billionaires tugging on that rope. We all should have an equal tug, and we just don't. So that's the problem. But any last words, Dan Schaefer, on the importance of this upcoming Wisconsin Supreme Court race, April 1st?
Yeah, I think we've got, you know, some interesting signposts to kind of look at over the course of the next, I think it's, what is it, 5 weeks from today, as we record this on Monday the 24th, that we're 5 weeks away from the election day on this. So that means we're just over 3 weeks away from early voting starting. And then I think March 12th, there's going to be a debate in this. There's going to be a head-to-head debate between Schimmel and Crawford. The Marquette University is hosting that evening. We'll be, of course, covering it across the Civic Media Network, too. And so, you know, there's going to be, it's, you know, we're right back to it, Wisconsin. We're right back into the campaigns and the ads and the debates and everything that we were so exhausted by November of last year. We're right back to it in March of this year.
And we need to talk to our family members and our friends. Just, I think this is the best way to counter that big money. It's just person to person stressing the importance of this race and turning out to vote. Dan Schaefer, political editor here at Civic Media, founder of the Recombobulation Area. Thanks so much for being my guest on this Wisconsin Forward podcast.
Thanks so much.
For my next podcast, I'm going to be tackling the big issue of how to confront Trump, Elon Musk, and fascism here in the United States. You're not going to want to miss that one.